This podcast is a production of Lonely Planet. Be sure to visit us online at lonelyplanet.com or send an email to podcasts@lonelyplanet.com.
Welcome to Lonely Planet's Ethiopia Travelcast. I'm Tom Hall. Today, I'm talking to Matt Phillips, who's just returned from Ethiopia. Matt has previously written for Lonely Planet on Canada, India, and Southeast Asia. A native Canadian, he grew up on Canada's west coast with his head in the sky and his toes in the sea. With his penchant for isolated beauty and his love of a good laugh, surely nowhere was better for Matt to do a little research and writing than Ethiopia. As can sometimes happen, the phone line to Matt was a little rickety, but the power of Matt's story should mean you won't notice a thing. Ethiopia, almost the only African country to have escaped European colonialism, has kept firm hold of its cultural identity. With its complex traditions, ancient history, and long connection with Christianity, Ethiopia is a fascinating country to visit. Known above all for its exceptional historical attractions, its sites include centuries-old rock-hewn churches and grandiose castles. Home to several famous archaeological finds, Ethiopia is also known as the cradle of humanity. Archaeologically and historically speaking, Ethiopia is to East Africa what Egypt is to North Africa. So Matt, I think quite a few images naturally spring into people's minds when they think about Ethiopia. What would you say the biggest misconception about travelling there is?
I'd have to say the biggest misconception has to be what actually exists in Ethiopia. Most people I talk to, they're just, you know, surprised, why would you go to Ethiopia? And you start to tell them, you know, that there's these amazing, you know, amazing Lake Tana with dozens of islands with these monasteries with priests, you know, practicing Christianity, and, you know, the north, amazing, the Simien Mountains, you know, average elevation 4,000 meters, something like that, and civilization in the north, and there's all these tombs and ancient obelisks, you know, 98% of them still haven't been excavated. And then, I don't know, even the rock churches at Lalibela, and there's just so much to offer in Ethiopia, and people really, I think the press is just, people just see Ethiopia in the press as a country devoid of culture and just full of starvation. So that's probably, I'd have to say, the biggest misconception.
What's the best way to get around the country?
It depends. Like in southern Ethiopia, it's quite tricky because some of the areas are really, really remote, like the Omo Valley, and you're forced either to ride in the back of Isuzu lorries, for instance, or if you have a few more dollars and less time, you can hire a four-wheel drive, which is pretty pricey in Ethiopia. Kind of tops $100 US per day. Whereas the north of the country, the roads are traditionally better and they're improving now. There's a lot more paved roads between cities. And so you just ride buses and they're long. Like, and it's a journey from the capital, Addis Ababa, to Bahar Dar. Used to take a day and a half. Now it's possible some journeys they can make it in one day. It's rather fun because some parts aren't too fun because Ethiopians are rather deathly scared of moving air. So on a bus, you'd be frowned pretty hard upon by the people if you dare even opening a window. So it's a bit hot and dusty in the buses, but it's quite fun. And buses make lots of stops, especially when you're going through some of the highland areas. And, you know, people will come up, sell fresh roasted barley. It tastes something like popcorn. And it's quite lovely. I mean, now if I ate it, I'd probably be rather disgusted. But at the time when you're hungry, it's rather divine. Bus journeys, they're quite enjoyable.
I've heard a few interesting stories about bus journeys in Ethiopia, about, you know, some rather strange rituals that go around them. I wonder if you could just talk us through a typical bus journey in the country.
Most buses in Ethiopia don't actually operate on a time schedule. You show up, you're just told to show up to whatever bus station at around 5:30 or 6 a.m. and you basically wait until the bus is full before it leaves. But I've had occasions, one in a town called Woldia, trying to go to Lalibela. I showed up at 6 a.m. By about 11, the bus was full. We pulled out, drove about 5 minutes to a garage, and pulled in for an hour and a half's worth of repairs. I mean, you're not laughing at it at the time, but afterwards you definitely look back and laugh, and it was the fact that they didn't have the money to actually pay for the repairs until we'd all paid for our tickets. The one nice thing about in Ethiopia, they're quite strict about not allowing people to sit in the actual aisles. You don't have the most leg room if you're over 6 feet. It's a bit cramped, but it's a bumpy ride. But I mean, the scenery in Ethiopia it's just astounding, especially in the north. Some of the corners are rather hair-raising with cliffs on one side. But I don't know, they're quite enjoyable.
Matt, is it true that time operates differently in Ethiopia? That sounds really quite bizarre. Could you explain to me how that works?
It's currently 1998 in Ethiopia, because they're still following the Julian calendar, where the rest, most of the Western world switched to the Gregorian calendar a few centuries ago. So it's quite interesting having a stamp in your passport for pre-2000. And because Ethiopia is quite close to the equator, you basically always end up with 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of darkness each day. So when the sun rises in the morning, it's considered 12 o'clock. After 1 hour of it being light, it's 1 o'clock. After 2 hours of being light, it's 2 o'clock. And in the evening, when the sun sets, it sets at 12 o'clock. After 1 hour of darkness, it's 1 o'clock. After 2 hours of darkness, it's 2 o'clock. So it makes complete sense from that point of view, but from the Western standpoint, it's a bit hard to get used to.
I'm sure traveling in an adventurous place such as Ethiopia wasn't all plain sailing. Did you have any scary moments when you were traveling there?
Some scary moments. I mean, I was in southern Ethiopia when a lot of the political unrest happened with there was elections in May. Most of the people in the country did not agree with the result that Meles Zenawi's party winning the election. So there were some riots, and the police, I think, killed about 40 people within the capital. I was south of the capital at the time, but it was a bit hairy to say when I came back to the capital, seeing burnt out buses and burnt tires on the road and things like that. But other than that, I'd have to say visiting some of the rock churches in northern Ethiopia, especially the more remote ones, the Tigray churches. There's one called Abuna Yamata, which it's quite hard to describe, but basically if you can imagine two rock pinnacles, and about a third of the way up one of the pinnacles is this rock church. So you kind of take a guide, climb up for about 45 minutes, and at one point it's a vertical face, so you take off your shoes and socks and you use everything from your toes to fingernails to get up. And I made it, well, as my guide said, 99.9% of the way there, and we made it around the back to basically a precipice with a 300-meter drop on one side and a 20-meter drop on the other, and having to just, it was about a 2.5-meter ledge, but just to climb up this ledge with not very strong handholds, and if you slip, you basically go off the 300-meter cliff. So I stood there for a few minutes, and then I turned around and sat on the edge for a while and watched the two other people who showed up an hour or so later joyously make it up without a problem. But I think I was more scared for them doing it than I was actually doing it myself. So I think that moment in itself was my most scary time in Ethiopia.
From what you've said, Ethiopia sounds like it's a very different destination, and it may not be that traveling there is for everyone. Who would you recommend to visit Ethiopia? What sort of traveler do you think would have a good time there?
Well, funny thing is, it is if you're heading as a backpacker, it's probably one of the more difficult destinations, just because the distances are so great, and the bus journey, some being, you know, a day and a half long, something like that. But Ethiopian Airlines which surprises a lot of people, it's one of the most respected airlines in Africa, and they link most of the major cities. So you actually see quite a few retirees. You know, I'm not your average retiree, but they're traveling through Ethiopia, basically being able to fly between destinations and cutting out the long bus journeys. So in that sense, it appeals to both ends of the gamut, I think.
Well, Matt, you've got a lot of fantastic stories about visiting the country. What would you say was your number one highlight of traveling in Ethiopia?
Well, there's a lot of them, but for one, the Simien Mountains are just astounding. I mean, you can't really, they're quite hard to describe, because it's not these massive peaks that you'd think, you know, in the Alps or the Rockies, something like that, but it's just this massive plateau that before you really know it, you're on the top, and then you just reach these precipices with views. Just astounding views. It's a toss-up between that and Lalibela. Lalibela is the town, a remote town in northern Ethiopia. I mean, there's no banks. There's not much there at all. But tourist-wise, it's an extravaganza. There's 12 or 13 churches that have been carved right out of the mountain, and they're not, you know, you'd think carved out of the mountain, you'd think, oh, you know, cave-like churches. But it's quite similar to Petra in Jordan. They're just these absolutely phenomenal churches, and it's just got this really ancient air about it. It's just really casual, and it's really lovely.
So, Matt, out of all the times that you were traveling around in Ethiopia, I wonder if anything particularly amusing happened to you while you were out there, one particular standout memory that really makes you chuckle.
Well, it's quite odd. It's not all the days of being a travel writer for Lonely Planet are glorious. You know, it's a rainy day, you're expecting to see these big mountainous views and you're seeing nothing but gray and rain. We're kind of heading towards the Bali Mountain National Park near the town of Dinsho. And my driver and I had basically come in some of the more remote areas of the south. You'd pick up people and give them a lift just because transportation is so sporadic. So we were driving up towards Dinsho, and we saw about 30 or 40 people carrying a bed above their heads. And I immediately asked my driver if he thought it was a funeral. And then we both realized that women are not actually allowed to follow in funeral processions, so it couldn't be that. So, he said it must be someone who's quite sick. So we pulled over, and I said, well, let's offer them a ride. And, he started talking to them, and of course I didn't understand. They weren't even speaking Amharic, which is the language spoken by most Ethiopians. And they lowered the bed onto the ground, and, I could just see this body wrapped up in a blanket, and I literally thought it was someone on death's door. So my driver immediately got out and pulled this tarp from the back of our Land Cruiser over the back seat, and three locals sat in the back, and they carried this body in. I was just really, really emotional. I mean, I almost started to cry just because you could see the worry on people's faces and that type of thing. And as they loaded this body into the truck, this head popped out of the blanket, and it was a very young girl, probably an 18-year-old girl, and she just said something, which I, of course, didn't understand. And they immediately whisk her out of the truck, and within about 15 to 20 seconds, we could hear a baby crying. And at that point, the emotion completely shifted among the crowd, and they all started cheering and were so happy. And it was a pretty remarkable moment. And we went on our way. And about three or four days later, we were coming back, and we just stopped to buy some supplies. And it ended up being the village where this woman had come from, and someone recognized us. And they gave us a big cheer, and it was good to hear that the mother and baby were both fine. So it was definitely an uplifting moment, that's for sure.
And finally, Matt, I would like to ask you, what would you say that the future for tourism in Ethiopia is?
I'd say it's pretty bright. I mean, most people just, like I said before, there's so many misconceptions that people aren't aware of what actually is in Ethiopia. And I think the more that people become aware of what actually is in Ethiopia, it's just nothing but up for the Ethiopian tourism industry. I mean, they're trying to make changes as well. I mean, they do lack, compared to Kenya, Tanzania, South Africa, they lack a lot of wild game parks in that instance. And in southern Ethiopia, the Omo Valley, there's two parks there that are now being taken over by a private consortium, and they're trying to actually reintroduce a lot of endemic animals back into the park. So that's going to bring a lot more people searching for wild game into Ethiopia. And as well, there's been a lot of press lately about the Danakil Depression, which is in the northeast of the country. A lot of people like National Geographic call it the most hospitable place on earth. But I mean, there's a lot for Ethiopia to offer. It's just a matter of people hearing about it, I think, before it takes off.
Well, Matt, thank you very much for your time today. I think you've given us a fascinating insight into Ethiopia and the realities of traveling around this complex but very rewarding sounding country. I think we'll all be very excited to see the results in the next edition of Ethiopia and Eritrea.
This podcast is a production of Lonely Planet. Get inspired, research a destination, or chat with thousands of travellers at the Lonely Planet website, lonelyplanet.com. You can also email us with questions and comments at podcasts@lonelyplanet.com.